Okay, my name is Bill Lockard, and the workshop is called The Sacred, the Profane, Disabilities, and Deafness. Well, we've got a real small group, so we don't have to spend a lot of time with rules of communication, but we do have some deaf and hard of hearing people here as well as hearing. So it would be nice if this was as much of an exchange as possible. And so some rules for communication. If you want to say something, please raise your hand. That's not like raise your hand and then start talking, but raise your hand and then I'll identify you and get ready to go. And my cue will be to look at the interpreter to know whether the interpreter has everybody caught up. That is if she is signing or if she's speaking. Then we'll know everybody's on the same track, has the same opportunity to push the Jeopardy button and give the answer. What usually happens with when you have two groups or two languages going, which is what we have in our society, the deaf people are almost always behind because the deaf people are usually not in the leading role. When they are in the leading role, the hearing people are almost always behind. They're almost always discriminated against. They almost always are very introverted, nervous, antisocial, anxious, introverted, etc. All the labels that we typically assign to deaf and hard of hearing people because we don't think that they are interacting. So those are the rules. I wanted to introduce myself a little bit and what I do and where I come from so that, because what I think my wife and I do, Beth, and we work together, is really we work trying to hook up the sacred, the profane, disabilities, and deafness. I mean, that's what we do. We work in a county in Pennsylvania that is rather rural. We came from working at a center school for the deaf and hard of hearing in Pennsylvania. And if you know anything about the education system for deaf and hard of hearing children, you either have mainstream schools in which children are put in with hearing children, and then they have some sort of accommodations, signing teachers, hearing aids, etc. And there are very few people that make their access easy. Most people are hearing, and so there's a lot of difficulty in interaction. The center school, just about everybody, not necessarily signs, because center schools don't all have manual sign language philosophies, but for those that do, which is most of them, from the superintendent on through, there's just this this whole set of people, but it's totally accessible to everybody. So that was our background. Then we got married and moved into a rural county, and were actually our first job in that county when we thought we were pretty much out of specific deafness work, was we were hired as a result of a lawsuit against a children and youth services organization. The lawsuit claimed that they had not provided access to a family that had two deaf parents and four hearing children. By the time we came on the scene and were hired as a result of the lawsuit, three of the children had been removed and the fourth was close. Not long after we started working, the fourth was removed, which to the people who hired us, not with a whole lot of interest, justified everything they had said previously. Because even though now they had accessible service, see, even the fourth child needed to be removed. We told you so. This family introduced us to community services for deaf and hard of hearing. And when I say community services, I'm talking about anything and everything. From work with their hearing children in the school system, in the welfare system, in the social security system, to mental health, and every part of mental health, from community services, psychiatric diagnosis and care, medication, outpatient, inpatient, to the legal system. We've been in and out of crisis intervention, psychiatric hospitals. We got into prisons, saw our first prisons. We began testifying. We got into systems we basically had only known about, and suddenly were both expert as deaf experts and didn't know anything about parole and probation, youth adoption, foster care. You know, these are specialty areas, and each area has their own specialty. And we ran into tremendous difficulties in the experts in each field being very defensive, that they knew what they were doing, that we didn't have the training on the one hand. And on the other hand, people that did recognize our field of expertise and just asked us to give them more and more and more information so that they could do their jobs more accessibly. So that's where we came from. The idea of this sacred, profane disability and deafness, what I had wanted to do, and there's only an hour, I think that what I had wanted to do was to have people write some adjectives for sacred, what they thought sacred was. Then some adjectives for profane, and on for disability and deafness. My idea was, as I tried to work out this workshop, was that there are just unbelievable crossovers. And that one doesn't necessarily work without the other. It's hard to imagine the sacred unless you have something to compare it to with the profane. And disabilities has had so many different meanings and approaches. I think a lot of it because people with disabilities haven't always been included in our society. So we haven't had enough exposure to know what to do. That people have been closeted. Children with handicaps have often been kept at home right on through adulthood. So there hasn't been the kind of inclusion that has been important for us to know how to interact and what to feel. So that as we went into different community providers in all those different systems, many of them had never seen deaf and hard of hearing people. So in that kind of circumstance, it's awkward to say, well, you're not providing adequate service. Well, they don't know what adequate service is. in any case, the whole issue of what is a disability as opposed to deafness, for example, in the old days, a disability had a very kind of bleak, needy, can't do, I must take care of, kind of idea on the one hand. That Beth oftentimes in her workshops talks about as the three P's. I might as well write something now that I have this, be the only thing I write probably. Pity. Paternalism, taking care of the person. And patronism, which is almost like, yeah, sure. Not listening. If there's a theme for this workshop, it is that the old way we looked at disabilities when we were not aware was that we told people with disabilities what to do, how they were, what they could do, and what we would do for them. The new view of disabilities supposedly is different. Okay. The other part of the old view of disabilities is a concept that was, if you weren't taking care of the person with disabilities, you were providing equal treatment. And the concept there was that we need to treat each other equally. Very human Christian thing to do. So what we had was fathers who said, okay, all the kids, come on. We had teachers in mainstream programs who said, okay, now we're all going to have the class. I'm going to speak to all the kids. We have a father, let me give you an example of equal treatment. This will be my drama for the day. This is a hearing baby. I'll do it over here so you can see it. Okay, what a great, you can sign this. It is a beautiful day. Look at the tree, it's green. Look at that person, look at that. I just talk and I talk and I talk anything and everything that comes up. I use talk as a diversion. I use talk just to show, to delight, to everything. Now, he smiles. Equal treatment says, that's what I do with a deaf or hard of hearing child, in some senses. And it led to teaching speech and lip reading. Endless pursuit to get up to where the other person was. But it was telling what the person needed to do. It was not listening. Now, Scott Hazard's description of the theme for the summer, listening to the sacred, is that basically we are supposed to shut up and listen to others. The new disability laws take the concept of equal treatment and they say that concept is so damn discriminating and discriminatory that it literally oppresses people with disabilities. And it oppresses people with disabilities clearly who are deaf and hard of hearing. Now, one of the crossovers that I wanted to describe before, when you have sacred, profane, disability, and deafness, is that deafness can be seen as anything but a disability. Deaf people, most deaf people, do not want to be considered disabled. And that model is really what the new disability acts are saying, that people with disabilities aren't disabled, oddly enough. What they're saying is that we all have to listen to each other. And that comes under not the old idea of equal treatment, but equal opportunity. That's the big concept in the new disability laws. And what it really does is it throws out, in many ways, the idea of being disabled and introduces the concept of being different. And I think if there's one thing that the deaf and hard of hearing, deaf power, deaf pride movement is to lead the way for the old people with disabilities who couldn't do, who needed to be taken care of, as very special, very creative, very giving, very capable people who can not only be empowered, but who can empower. My own experience is that once an agency gets a deaf or hard of hearing professional in to do the work they should have been doing in the past, but hearing people were doing, those hearing people are empowered. Also, the deaf people who are being served are empowered. But there is there's two books that I wanted to refer to before. This is The Mask of Benevolence and Disabling the Deaf Community. And the disabling of people with deaf disabilities is what the old system was. In this particular book, Harlan Lane makes it very clear how we have done that. And I don't think it's intentional. A lot of it is just lack of information. He talks about the fact that instead of us listening to people with disabilities, we have told them, and one of the things we've told, in a sense, is that we've used projection of what it's like to be deaf to then mold our policies on dealing with deaf and hard of hearing people. If people who have been asked what disability they would least like to have, mental illness, deafness, blindness, mental retardation, deafness amongst hearing people is always right at the top. And hearing people will constantly say, I can't imagine. And listen to the projection of this. This is the telling of what it's like to be deaf. I can't imagine what it's like to not have sound. I can't imagine being able to do my job. I can't remember. All of that influences what I then think about the poor deaf person who can't do. I can't imagine being able to do anything as a deaf person. So, therefore, deaf people can't. So, I'm hearing, I'm the director of my agency, whatever, I set up policies to take care of them. Okay. The new disability laws talk about equal opportunity, and it's a real interesting switch that is so, I don't know, overwhelming overwhelming with what it impacts. For example, what is equal opportunity with a employment situation? Let's talk about a policy that one truck company set up to provide equal treatment for their truck drivers. To become a supervisor and move up, they had a requirement that said you had to be a driver first. Why? Because they wanted all the people in the company to feel they could. It's a very positive requirement. They didn't want supervisors always to be pulled in from outside businesses. Then all the low blue collar workers, the truck drivers, to feel, well, the white collar guys are coming. Us and them. So the rule, and it was UPS, was that all supervisors had to be drivers first. Equal treatment. Nobody can become a supervisor if there's not a driver first. Now, is that a discriminatory policy?
No.
No. I mean, it's equal treatment. You all have the same opportunity. All the drivers have the same opportunity. If one or two of the drivers was hurt, does that driver now have the opportunity? What about the people who applied to be drivers who weren't allowed to be drivers? Did they have an opportunity to ever be working at the company? Or they were hired as a secretary or as a cleanup person, but not as a driver because they had one leg, or one eye, or they were deaf, or whatever the rules were. My reading of that and many, many other well-intentioned policies that they're clearly, clearly discriminatory. But that concept infiltrates everything we do and we have to like analyze all our policies, all our rules to see if they're really equal opportunity for other people to join. Our work, let me give you some examples of deaf stuff to see if you can understand whether deaf people have equal opportunity or not. ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act, talks about different areas for making better access. Public accommodations, hotels, restaurants, for example. Does a deaf business professional and a hearing business professional on a business trip, traveling, have the same opportunity to use their hotel as a place of business and comfort and entertainment as that hearing professional on a business trip? Does that hotel, that public accommodation, provide equal opportunity? Okay. Clearly not. I won't say why. But equal treatment? Yeah. They all have a phone. They all have a phone. They all have TV. All of them have a TV. What else do you want? We put a TV in every room. Can the deaf person listen to the TV? No. Can the deaf person use the phone for business? To contact their family? Can the deaf person know if somebody's at the door? They don't even know if somebody's at the door. Can they call for room service? Can they make an outside call to their business? Can they receive a phone call? Now, what does that do for the deaf business professional who then doesn't wake up in time, who misses their plane? They're led to look stupid, deaf and dumb. they're late, they have to keep asking. They become what we did with equal treatment. They become dependent. Our equal treatment has forced dependency. It has forced mistakes. This book talks about both the problems with our telling disabled people what is their problem, with projection, our idea of what their problem is, and our oppressing them. Often not intentional. Not intentionally. If you don't realize, deaf people can use a phone. If you don't realize that, well, was I on purpose oppressing a deaf person as a hotel manager? Yes. Before ADA, no. I was not intentionally doing it. After ADA, yes. And I'm legally responsible for not making the accommodations ahead of time. ADA says, listen to the sacred, basically. Not to tell disabled people what to do, but to listen to them. Specifically in ADA, it says, if you have a person with a disability, and you feel that an accommodation might be needed, the first thing you do, and the first priority, is to ask the person what they might need to have equal opportunity. Now that's a real big change than what we had before. So now, if a deaf person applies for a job, shows up at your door, the tendency in the past was two things. There's nothing here that deaf people can do. That was first. Telling. It's too dangerous here. Too dangerous. Safety is a big issue here. Telling. They projected what was happening. Now the law says, you want a job here? You can still show surprise. A deaf person work here? How? You ask. How can we communicate? How can we make the application? How can we have the interview? How could you communicate at staff meetings? But it's me, the non-disabled person, who is responsible to ask and listen. Whole different approach to what was happening before. Telling. It's a change in power. It's taking the oppression off. The law is kind of going back off. Equal opportunity. It's an interesting visual thing. And the law just says back off, and now we have equal opportunity.
Was the law originated by a disabled person? In other words, even in the creation of that law? Or was it, again, the non-disabled saying through a law, this is what will make the disabled?
I think the...
In other words, is that what you want? Mm-hmm. Good.
The big original disability law in 1973, the Rehab Act, I don't know how much it was of disabled people. I think there was probably some. The law is pretty good. But that only linked to federal workers or federal contractors. But ADA links to private, local, state, me, you, when back east we have a deaf club meeting. Maybe it's an educational thing about using interpreters, for example. And we invite the public. We are responsible to guarantee that that workshop is accessible to hearing people. We become responsible as offering a public service to say, or a hearing person could complain. It's discriminatory. And it is. If a hearing person came and they did not have an interpreter, and these deaf people were having a great time and really moving along, I don't understand. That's my right. Now, when I said that you have to throw out the concept of disabilities, that's exactly what I meant, eventually. I do not think I'm disabled. But in that situation, I am disabled in a relative, comparative way. I'm not a disabled person. I'm in a disabled situation, a disabled environment. I don't have equal opportunity. So in that situation, I'm disabled. Unfortunately, most of the situations, the deaf and hard of hearing people are the disabled people because they don't have equal opportunity. That's all it is. I know that seems to ignore the real challenges of being without arms and legs and blind and deaf. I don't want to ignore that, but really, if you went to a deaf club, you would see that clearly the deaf people can do anything. That the only barrier is the language that the hearing people are using outside of that environment. That's it. That they easily get along. They can see sirens. They can see them. They can understand legal things. They can do psychological work. They can teach. And it's clear when you see a deaf environment. So that concept of disabilities that deaf people have rejected for so long now, they've proved it's true. It's a relative term. That's all it is.
A way I was thinking about it as you were talking is that it sounds like you're saying that that very often, or most of the time, the disadvantages, you locate that in the environment. It's the environment that is disadvantaging rather than locating a disability within a person. It's the nature of the environment that creates that. It's not so much something about the person. I mean, given the right environment, people are very capable. Does that fit?
If I'm in a wheelchair and I can't get into a building, I'm stuck. I can't do it. But put the ramp in and I get in, then I'm fine. Widen the hallway so I can get through to my boss's office or people can come to me. Give me a telephone that I can use, a computer that I can use, and I'm not disabled. You have changed the environment, actually. So it's a new way of perceiving that situation. Put an interpreter here, and the communication flows. It's a little slower, a little bit more awkward, but it's so special that we learn from each other because now we can listen to each other. Beth on Thursday is going to really talk more about the spiritual parts of this whole sacred, she doesn't want to talk about the profane part. But her deaf perspective of God and faith is an excellent workshop that relates to that kind of discrimination and disabling environment that deaf and hard of hearing people have grown up with in the religious side. The ADA and laws are really related to social, legal, scientific things. But I don't know where your time was.
1225.
It was a book written in 1960s by a man by the name S.Z. Great name. I don't know if any of you have heard of him. He was a psychiatrist, a very radical psychiatrist. Not very radical for the 60s, but compared to the main psychiatric profession, he was very radical. And he made the same kind of connection between the spiritual and the scientific. He said, the book he wrote was called The Manufacture, The Making of Madness. That we make other people crazy. The myth of mental illness. Powerful statement for people who've worked in community-based mental health programs where you see people. Myth? That person is not mentally ill? I mean, I have seen people who mentally ill. Whoo! But his connection was that long ago in the Middle Ages, from science before, the rulers, the people in control, were in the spiritual world, the religious world. They were priests, they were popes, bishops. And the way they controlled what they didn't like and didn't want, they said, I'm good, you're bad. I'm nice, you're evil. And then a whole system developed around that. And although maybe not the whole idea, but a big part of it, especially the people who were not using the system properly, was to oppress anyone they didn't like. So if there was a woman who was a midwife, for example, she's evil! She's evil! That was it. It's all you needed to do was assign that label, and that woman was done. All her efforts were finished. What this writer did is he connected the same human negative oppression to our new world of science, where religion is not that powerful anymore. We now have not good and bad. Now you have healthy and sick, able, unable, disabled. And a whole system is built around that. So it's really part of that eagerness for power that has guided us with our old disability oppression and projections and can't do. And it's that whole thing that I think we can throw out the bad spiritual and the bad science and listen to the sacred more in paying attention to people with disabilities. I even like to use that. To pay attention to disabling situations. To not help each other, but to empower each other. Because when I can communicate with you, you can communicate with me. I'm empowered. I can't give power without sharing it with myself. That's just not a clear sign. The new disability language says to empower people. But that still has the me empowering you idea. It's still me and you. The poor people who need power and the people who have power. I think Christian interpretations can say you can't give without getting. That the very giving is learning, is growing. That it's not something I have, you don't. It's the process of giving that makes me grow. Well, it's the process of empowering that gives me the power back. So it's the we, they thing that I think needs to be changed with the concept of disabilities, and is changing. And I think that the deaf, power, pride thing is so clearly helpful for us to understand that. And I think that's all I have to talk about.
Is it common in deaf culture to describe other sensory impairments as disabilities, like not being able to walk or see, or maybe retardation? How are those viewed?
My feeling is that those people are not crazy themselves or disabled. I think that for themselves and those people, they're just people. They're people first. Deaf people, hard-hearing people, they think about themselves as not being disabled. We're human. Yeah, I know. More like an ethnic group, of a culture. They think that the blind people, they feel, well, normal. They're normal people. They feel disabled when other people look at them as not worthy or not able to do, etc. For example, I'll add something to hers. The Institution for the Deaf and the Blind are there. The deaf, we come up to one another and curl on the falls. How do you feel about being blind? Blind? What? I feel sorry for you because you're deaf and you can't hear. You can't hear music that I enjoy myself. I'm not depressed about being deaf. No, but I'm depressed about you being blind. Oh well. I thought we were just human. Yes, it's that. More like another person is different. You have glasses? I don't. Okay. Do you use glasses? I don't. Well, and people who have red hair, people who don't. Some people can walk and others can't.
Yes.
So really
yes, but no. Deaf people are no less lousy than hearing people. There are many deaf people who say, deaf people aren't disabled. I'm not handicapped. Those people are handicapped. I'm not crippled. People who are disabled are blind. So it's the same with hearing people. I think this new concept, I mean, it's not really new, but it's a new perspective of it, is not easy for all of us to understand and to figure out how to fit it in our families and our lives. And I think most of us still see people who are different than us, especially if they're physically different, as disabled. Deaf people do, I hear it all the time. Not all deaf people, but not all hearing people.
Because God made each of us different in the way we look and in our abilities, it's no surprise that we are also different in our experiences and in our attitudes. So I would not expect all of deaf culture to have a single attitude. But I was just wondering if there was a prevailing one. What I heard Beth and Judy say sounds like part of the picture, and what you said, Bill, is another part of the picture. What do you think? diverse attitudes?
That's saying, it's kind of like a family that some of the deaf and hard hearing people grew up in very oppressed families, family situations and environments, where parents controlled how you felt that you're disabled. You felt able, not able, you're not normal. What I'll say, but to give power to exchange it, to interaction when you grow up, when you work, and at school, and all those things. Do you understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Can you interpret my voice okay? Mm-hmm.
It's not a transition that's going to happen overnight, because you have to have a system that's set up to identify something as a disability. In ADA, for example, it does not say anyone with a difference is allowed to have any accommodation they want in any job, etc. It says, if disability means, for our current purposes, some problem with hearing, speaking, walking, breathing, maybe there's another one. Thinking, it's those doing, just being able to participate. If there's a block somehow in participating, so that anyone who has a small injury at work can't necessarily say, I need a new chair, I need a new car, I need a better computer, it becomes very vague. And it will continue to be that way for a long time. Who is eligible and can receive SSI, for example? Deaf people can. And there's a big argument in the deaf community about saying, I'm not disabled! And the other person, don't say that too loud. They'll take away our SSI. There's a large number of deaf and hard of hearing people who are on SSI. Some, you might say, well, they're lazy. But it gets back to the idea, equal opportunity. If you have not had the opportunity to work, the opportunity to communicate, the opportunity to participate and show your skills, or get your skills, learn your skills, to really be competitive, then that will continue to have some meaningful label of disability. It's a comparative thing. When the environment changes, the disability changes. The idea of ADA, money-wise, is that if you open up the work doors and the hotel and the communication and that all gets set up in 5-10 years, then you go back to deaf people and blind people and you say, SSI, whoo! Mm-hmm. That's it. You got 3 months to get a job or you're done. And then you gotta start paying taxes. For all the other people who might become disabled now, with maybe with lung problems because of the environment, they might become the new disabled people who now need SSI because we don't have the technology to provide breathing equipment so they can stay on the job or whatever. Then we can give them SSI. And the government can fund people to develop technology for those new disabilities. Because now, deaf people aren't disabled anymore. They don't have a right to SSI. They have a right to equal something.
Like when I'm driving, about when SSI takes control, I grew up in a deaf family, I didn't feel like I really needed to do it. Everything I want to do, problems I'm missing.
The problem that many deaf people have and needing SSI is because of hearing people.
Deaf people are you should be dependent upon getting jobs and needing support. So if people stop and they tell people you're going to miss out on a lot if you can't hear, they stop that, and then deaf people will realize, yeah, maybe I should get a job and then I'll feel like I can do everything. And if people say, if people feel, problem with myself is I don't feel disabled or anything. I don't feel like I'm missing out on anything. But in people who feel the deaf and they're missing out on things, they should have some support so that they miss out different ways and they won't miss out on anything. I need to say about the hearing people and change for the deaf who feel I'm missing.
Who feel about the changes that need to be made, the accommodations have to be made. It's a very slow process that all of us have to kind of get used to and learn. Hearing people have to learn what it is about deafness. What is it that is disabling to them? What can we do together in each area? And then the whole system will probably change because those opportunities open up. And the SSI will become a different. When deaf people go to SSI offices from here on, those workers will have less of a tendency to give SSI. The rules to get SSI will become more strict. It's not going to happen right away because we still go to mental health workers, employers, prisons that have nowhere near equal opportunity. So it's going to be a long time before that happens. You have to remember that the effects of being oppressed last a long time. That deaf adults now, like Beth said, have felt oppressed for a long time. And how do you convince that person before an employer can ask a deaf person, for example, what do you need or want to be equal here? The deaf person has to feel confident enough to go to the job. And you don't just pass a law and I'm confident. Now I know the same as all my hearing friends. Bingo, 20 years of oppression and not being able to listen. I know, we're even, thank you. So.
One of the things that unites a culture or a society or a community is a common language. And right now, there are two languages that is being spoken here. One for the deaf and one for us. In order for us to become a community or a society, we must learn to speak the same language. And the opportunities for a hearing person to learn sign is almost negligible. There are no opportunities. I have tried. I took private lessons 6 weeks last year to learn sign. I went to a university to learn sign. And after I signed up, they told me, well, sorry, we don't have any more signing programs. It would just be finger spelling, and that would be the end of it. So I think I don't know if it's the responsibility of the deaf community, the hearing community, the educational community, to offer classes for people to communicate. But until this communication is reached, the deaf community is going to have a difficult time finding employment, because how do we communicate?
Know that there's a very, very strong movement in the United States and other countries as well. English or nothing. For voting ballots, to have them in Spanish and Vietnamese? No! You want to come to this country, you learn English. Now, how does that fit? And I can understand their reasoning. I'm not sure it's right. I understand the positives of that concept. But how does that fit with American Sign Language? This is touchy, and I'm not sure it's all been figured yet. But my own baby perspective is that the common language is English for common stuff. But for deaf people to be competitive, to become competitive in English, they have to have visual language. Now that does not mean that all hearing people must learn sign language. But there must be the equal opportunity allowed for deaf people to learn English equally.
As well as hearing people.
As hearing people. So it's the English, but it's not necessarily voice English. We're talking about English as written. But it has been shown again and again and again that deaf kids do not learn English by people saying, they don't. They just don't do it. Now, education philosophy is a weird, complicated thing because people are not deaf or hearing. There's this huge in-between where there are many hard-of-hearing people. There are people who become deaf. So there's no one way to accomplish equal opportunity, but it's listening to their needs of each. Beth is dying to respond.
Really want.
We really have to close soon, but...
I have a thought that your attitude is most important. You want to show in your smile, in your writing, in acting, in fingerspelling, whatever, that so much that you give us, that attitude, that personal attitude about disability is what's so negative. Do you understand? Judy's point. Okay. Question. It's impossible for sign language. One English. It's impossible for the English. I'm not really a good voice interpreter, so I'm sorry. It is not impossible for one English or one deaf to understand English. Really. Bye-bye. We'll talk about that, yeah. Bye-bye. It's the second language for American Sign Language, ASL. It's more visual. You understand it, the concepts in your head, and then you can write it in English. But you need to understand ASL myself. It's a problem. So that answers that question. Are you talking about deaf education? Or are you talking about all people, about language, trying to communicate language? Is that deaf is equal to English? That's impossible. Separate bye-bye means two different languages. Are you talking for deaf education? No, for English. For all people here, yeah. What we need, yes. We start to develop for education. Okay, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Well, that...
Second language, you mean you want all people here, right here, to be bilingual? You talk, no. What I meant, to think about one language for all the same, that's impossible. You just can't have one language for all.
Yeah, and that will become a hot issue as, and it's an economic one too, because providing interpreters is extremely expensive. It can be. For a meeting once in a while, for an interview, for the occasional deaf person, it's nothing and should be in the budget from last year. But imagine new university and a deaf person goes to take a class.